In partnership again with the HBCU Experience Movement and their new book that's coming out this June, the HBCU Experience, the Southern University System Edition, I am interviewing some of the co-authors of this book, and I hope you enjoy all of these episodes in this season to help out the HBCUs and spread awareness for HBCUs. Let me introduce you to Kimberly Collins Walker. She is the owner of Assurance Tax and Accounting Group, ATAG, a full-service tax and accounting firm, and Pickens Medical Transportation, a medical transportation company. Kimberly is no longer is no stranger to hard work and entrepreneurship. A graduate of Southern University and A&M College, Baton Rouge, Bachelor's of Science in Accounting, Kimberly is dedicated to empowering businesses to maximize their efforts by building a business that not only makes money, but also builds wealth. Kimberly prides herself on taking her clients' ill feelings towards income tax and helping them achieve a happy and healthy outcome on income tax reduction and management. A native of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Kimberly is the treasurer of the Southern University Alumni Home Chapter, an active member of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority and Incorporated and St. Paul Missionary Baptist Church. Mrs. Walker has been featured in Beautiful Black Magazine, the Rouge Collection, WAFB, NOLA.com, Cumulus Radio, and her very own Facebook Live, Ask the Tax Doctor, a question and answer series. She is the wife of Mark Walker and the parents of Colin Pickens Walker and Michaela Walker. During football season, you can find them in the stands supporting their favorite teams, the Southern University Jaguars and the New Orleans Saints. Education at Southern, all of that good stuff. So if you would, just tell me a little bit about, or tell us who you are and a little bit about why you picked Southern, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, I am Kimberly Collins Walker. I am a Southern University graduate, College of Business. I graduated from Southern University in 2009. I am currently an accountant in Baton Rouge. I was born and raised in Scotlandville, Louisiana. Scotlandville is in Baton Rouge, but it's the little town that is where Southern University is. So I grew up in that area, my whole life, and so I was very familiar with Southern University. And so it was always on the radar for me to, that would be possible, a school to attend. But, you know, when you get into your senior year, you're like, oh my gosh, I am almost to the free world. I don't want to stay at home. Let me just go somewhere else and just see mm-hmm. how the world is, or just branch out. Yeah. Well, 6 months prior to my ending of my senior year, I decided not to go to the university in Texas. I decided that Southern would be the best choice. For one, my parents encouraged me that I'll get just as good an education as Southern. On top of that, I'll be at home. And also the cost of just moving to another state was so expensive. And they just kept saying, you'll get a good education, possibly better experience at Southern. So I decided to stay. And I'm so glad I did.
So you were going to move to Texas?
Yes.
Oh, okay. For college.
I had got accepted to a school in Texas, and so I was excited. I was just like, okay, I'm leaving. I had this dream that I always wanted to come back home on holidays, you know, just to visit. But that wasn't my destiny.
So we got to unpack some of that stuff. So I have students that you know, have these dreams and, you know, want to do stuff. What brought you back to reality? You know, what made you listen to your parents ultimately? Because I talk to students, I'm like, hey, like, financially, this will work out better. You know what I mean? And I don't want to deter anybody from their dream at the same time. But, like, we also have to look at the reality of the situation. You about to pay full price going over here, but you could pay half or nothing over here. So does that play a factor too?
That was part of my reality too. When my parents looked at the numbers, it was just almost triple the amount to get the same education at the school in Texas that I could get right here at home.
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing different. Nothing. It was just me just want to say, oh, I'm just going to leave and go live my life. I thought I wanted that freedom. I thought that I was ready for it. It was just a dream that, you know, everybody look at, oh, when you graduate from high school, you get to move on to college. But I was just blessed to have a great university in my backyard that I didn't have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was really the main factor that they kept stressing. And even when we looked at the numbers to even went to school, when we went to the school, it was just like, it didn't make sense.
Right.
Not especially when you have a great university right here that offers the same thing.
That you so, want, yeah.
Yeah, and then another factor was that when I was in high school, in Louisiana, we had this club called 4-H. And a part of 4-H, you had to do a mentorship to figure out where did you want to go, because they were trying to stop high schoolers from just going into college and not knowing exactly where your focus area would be.
Mm-hmm.
So I did an internship, and I was like, okay, I took a couple business classes in high school. And so I was like, okay, well, let me just do accounting. You know, I was just like, let me just go ahead and get this grade. You know I wanted to do something in business, because at first I was deciding nursing, but then I realized I don't like blood. So I was like, okay, I do like office work, so maybe something in business. So I was torn between a manager, if I want to do management or accounting or finance. So there was this local CPA in Baton Rouge called Bonnie Jackson CPA. I reached out to her and let her know I was a senior in high school, and that a part of my curriculum was that I needed a mentor. So if I could mentor her for 3 to 4 months, just see what she do, what is the life of an accountant. And she accepted me to come in. And so when I was like, wow, I was like, you went to Southern? You know, during my era, it was, HBCUs were known, but it was a painted picture, you know, in society that, you know, that's an okay
degree to get.
College.
Yeah.
But if you want to be successful, you need to go to one of these PWIs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where you're going to get recognition at. And I was just amazed that, wow, you're CPA, you're African American, you're in a field that is predominantly white male field, and you're African American woman, and you're successful, and you went to Southern. So that stayed on my radar. So the whole time with me trying to figure out where I want to go, so that was another reason that stayed, that pushed me to go to Southern. So once I entered Southern, I was so excited. Because, of course, my friends were there. I met other people there. But it was one of my church members, she was a graduate of Southern, and she was in accounting. And she worked at LSU, which is the school on the other side of Baton Rouge, mm-hmm. which is a PWI. and she worked there, and she where she was in her position, she earned it. So, and when she found out I wanted to major in accounting, she basically was like, well, how about this? You need the experience, because I didn't, she didn't get the experience. So she had to work triple as hard to get to her level of success at LSU.
What do you mean by get the experience?
The accounting experience.
Okay.
So at that time she asked me, she said, well, I'll hire you in my department to be a student worker. When I came over to LSU, it was, everybody was just trying to figure out, how is this Southern University student a student worker at LSU?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there I gained a lot of government accounting experience. And that's when I saw the real picture. I was able to see the state funding.
Mm-hmm.
That the state was given to LSU, well, especially to my college that I was working at. And I was like, wow. And then when I researched to see what was the state funding for LSU, for Southern, it was almost six times the amount that Southern received.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, we were not even on the same playing field. So at that time, I stayed some years there, continued my years at Southern, you know, going through the curriculum, and it was my junior year that I decided, okay, I did my mentorship in high school. I do have experience in accounting on the government side, but my heart was public accounting. And so at that time I started interviewing for internships. I went to the career fairs. I just sent out blast emails to local CPA firms just so I could get the experience of accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, it was just out the blue. I sent my resume to another local black CPA. Her name was Kathy Scott CPA. And, there she gave me a chance. I basically poured my heart into this email. I said I've applied to numerous CPA firms, and I truly believe I was not selected because of where I go to school. I said, based on my experience, you know, I'm just looking for public experience, public accounting experience, because someday I do believe that I want to do public accounting and not government accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that moment, she replied back and told me that she is interested, but she could not, it was not in her budget this year to have an internship. And I told her, no worries, I'll work for free.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that the experience would carry me a long way. And I stayed with her for a year. And the second year the second year of my term there, that's when she offered me a job. When I graduated, she even offered me partnership of the accounting firm.
What?
So that's what I tell people. A lot of times you have to just have patience. And I talk about that in the book. Because a lot of people at that time called me crazy. Why would you leave a regular, even though it was a student worker job, that was paid a nice income to go to zero income?
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that the way I was seeing in my future, that this non-paid internship will give me more foundation than the paid student worker job. And I just knew that I just had to make temporary sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's one thing that I'm so grateful. And that's why I know it was divine for me to attend Southern, because each stepping block of my accounting career was fueled by a Southern alumni.
Mm.
And that's what I'm passionate about, is that's why I joined the Alumni Association to give back, to stay active, because I know that alums help, you know, build up the students. I mean, they did for me, because I could have been lost in a shuffle, just trying to figure out what I'm going to do, you know, but I thank God I wasn't. You know, I just had an alum that took me in and just said, okay, let me guide you. Let me show you what you needed to do, what your obstacles are, mm-hmm. you know, along with the faculty at Southern University, molding me. At Southern, we had this, on Wednesday, we had this thing called Pretty Wednesday. In the College of Business, they had Pretty Wednesday too, but it was a flip side to it. Yeah, you could come to school all pretty and stuff, but you need to come in business attire.
Yeah, professional.
Yeah, and so that got me prepared for the business world. Of course, doing projects, they pulled you out of your shell. As crazy as it may sound, I am a shy person. But being at Southern and where I had to interact with people, you know, it forced me to network.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, at Southern, they showed me that, you know, and I talked about in my book, that networking is key. You need to let people know who you are, or either get to know who other people are, because there will be at some point some type of connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so, those are the things that I'm just so grateful for at Southern University and the College of Business, that they molded me. The alumni just helped me grow to who I am today. There, I also learned about our history. A lot of things I did not know from high school and middle school. I don't know if I had just picked up the wrong history book, but that history was not in my history book.
Right.
So I learned a lot about my ancestors. I learned a lot about just the Southern University system, about the founders. And it makes you appreciate, you know, getting that education. Because when you read about how they founded Southern University, you know, at that time, you know, we wasn't allowed to read. But, you know, our ancestors were determined to create a university just for us, since no one else wanted to teach us. And so that's one of the things that's why I always advocate for Southern University, because of what our ancestors went through to create this university for us, just so we could have a platform. Yes, you know, of course, some of us go to other schools, to PWIs or Ivy League schools, but you can get the same education even better at Southern University. And it's like a home, you know. It reminds you like a, in Louisiana we have gumbo. So in gumbo you put all kind of things in this mixture, but it all tastes good. And that's what you can think of an HBCU. That is just a gumbo pot. You have all different types of cultures, people from all over, but at the end result, it's a good entree. You get a lot of things, and I'm just so excited and thankful for the experience. You know, I'm just thankful that I decided not to go to Texas, just to stay home, mm-hmm. and that, you know, I was raised right here by Southern University.
Did any of your family go to Southern?
No, my mom, she went to Southern Lab, which is the elementary to high school at Southern, but she did not graduate from Southern. She did attend, but she didn't finish. So that was another reason why I believe she really pushed me to go to Southern.
Right. And you said a while back that you took a unpaid internship, and you can get a lot of information and a lot of experience from doing for free. If you do it for free, like, people are more than willing to put you to work if you work for free. What we know that as Black people, right? But if it's for your benefit, like, you can be under a CEO, and just because you're doing it, you're doing a great job, number one, and you're doing it for free, they will let you follow and do all the things that a normal person would do that they were paying, right? So
exactly.
So we need to, because everybody want to get paid. Everybody want to, I don't want to say everybody. I don't like generalizing and doing that to everybody. But a lot of people, you know, want paid internships. Of course we want paid internships. But it's also the sacrifice is what you said, right?
Right. And that's the thing, you know, when I reached out to her, I was in desperate need because I knew, again, I was about to graduate within a year or so, going into a predominantly white field, and to even compete with people across town, I needed some experience. You know, my resume had to look so much better than
mm-hmm,
theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, I was just like, you know, I'll take anything. You know, as long as it's in a field, this is how bad I wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed the experience. And, you know, and Kathy, she saw that. And you know, she didn't know me. That was the craziest thing. I just said, I'm a student at Southern University. I know you're adjunct professor there. You know, I don't know you. You don't know me, but I'm an accounting student, and I want to practice in public accounting. And I'm just looking for experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just that connection, I guess, that the sincerity of my email. And she saw how bad I wanted it, like, at the point that I was, you know, even though she told me it wasn't in her budget this year, that I was fine with that. Because you're going to give me something more that money at that time will not.
Right. And you know, and that's and what, at, go ahead.
And even, and that's where, you know, I try to tell young people now that, you know, with me working with her, when I graduated, I was immediately offered partnership because she saw my dedication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so me getting an internship, getting paid that time, I mean, I would have had money in my pocket. But guess what? Because I didn't, and I took what she gave me, and I absorbed everything that I was able to learn from her like a sponge. She saw my dedication, so she gave me something long term
mm-hmm.
versus short term. So that's why I tried to. You,
and you know, didn't even you didn't even ask for it. Like you didn't even you wasn't even looking for a partnership. You was just looking for the experience.
Yes, that's all I was looking for. So she shocked me when she came up saying, "I want you to be partner." I'm just about to graduate. I'm like, you know, but again, she saw my dedication.
Right.
You know, and my work, I showed up to work every day like I was getting a check.
Right.
And I try to tell people all the time, you know, sometimes you have to make temporary sacrifices for your long-term goals.
Or long-term sacrifices for your goal. But you understood that. Not a lot of people understand that just sacrifice in general is one of the keys to success. Sacrifice, failure, growth, like all of that stuff is really important. And that's what I talk about all the time to people.
Yeah, that is true. And you know, and look, and I guess patience comes into play with that, especially at Southern, because that's, you know, when I started, internet registration was kind of just coming out. They were trying to figure out what in the world is this? How can we move to this type of registration? So I still was going from building to building, getting advisors to sign.
Yeah.
Advisor was in a meeting, waiting hours to meet with that advisor. So, again, I had to have patience. It was many times during registration, I just said, you know what, forget it. I'm not going to school. But the staff at Southern was like, no, you don't give up. you know, and that stayed with me, you know, don't give up. When people were telling me, no, we don't have, we're not accepting applications for internships, which I knew they kind of just pushed my application under because of the stereotype, because it said Southern University and not another school in mm-hmm. Louisiana. You know, but I stayed persistent. I knew that at some point, somebody's going to give me a chance, and I'm going to make sure when you give me a chance, I won't let you down. That'll be the best investment you'll ever do.
Right, right. Yeah, because the opportunities don't come that often, so you got to make the most out of every single opportunity.
Yes, you do. You have to capitalize on every opportunity you give
it. Whether it's little or big.
Right, and I tell people all the time, even my clients, you know, they're like, well, this happened. Look, it's okay. I know you're taking an L on this, but it's going to be that win that's going to bring you out. So mm-hmm. just every L that you take, just learn from it. Yeah. You know, it's not necessarily a true loss. You learning something from it so you don't do it again. And so that's what I do now, is that I did open, at that time, my partner, she did pass away in 2012. So in 2014, I closed my partnership, and I ended up opening my own accounting firm, Assurance Tax and Accounting Group. And so that's where I gained a lot of my experience and passion from her, because, you know, I saw her in a community wanting to educate our community about financial literacy, about, you know, don't giving up. So that's the same motto that I brought over to Assurance Tax and Accounting Group, where, you know, I do financial literacy in schools. I teach elementary, middle, high school. I go in, talk to them about budgeting, about finances. Because guess what? I didn't learn about budgeting or finance until 11th grade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some kids didn't even know about it until they came to college.
Right.
But until we break this cycle of the cycle that we have with finances, we have to start at an early age. And so that's my goal to basically lift as I climb, just educate our community about how to handle your finances,
so,
and how to, you know.
So I am a nuanced person. Like I want to see the little details in everything so that we can not perfect it, but like understand what's going on in our process. So what I'm seeing is that Black people have a bad relationship with money, and that relationship is the nuance is that our relationship is negative, and our parents' relationship with money is negative, and they're passing it along, and we've got this negative relationship. So even, because I see it with me and my friends that are doing all right, like even though we budget, we understand money, we're financial literate, you know, all of that stuff, not all the way financial literate, but even with all of that, we still have a bad relationship with money. And I think we need to deal with that in our quest for, or maybe I need to ask this, do you think we have a bad relationship with money?
Yes.
Okay. And how do you, how do you remedy that? Like, how do you talk about it? And because the poverty mindset is a real thing, and that encompasses a whole bunch of things, not just financial literacy or just finances, period. But we have to deal with that nuance that other people don't have to deal with, you know? So, like, do you talk about that in your financial literacy talks? And because from what I know about, like, the poverty mindset. You know, they did a study about on like farmers because farmers have peak times where they make a lot of money when the crops are harvest or whatever, and then it goes down. And when they said that when it goes down, they make poor decisions about purchases and things like that when there's a lack of money. So a lot of us come from a lack of, and are going in the right direction, but we still keep with those same that same relationship that our parents or whoever our environment passed on to us.
Right. Just, you know, with the financial literacy, you know, in our culture, we've been taught, you know, kind of not to trust the banks, not to put all your money in there. You know, if you make money, go ahead and do what you got to do, you know. But now we need to teach our generation to save.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where budget comes into play, you know, and that's budget is very, very, very important, because it gives you the real picture of what your expenses are and what you bring in.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just saying, oh, I remember my check is $2,500, my rent maybe $1,000, you know. So, and then budgeting allows us to see on paper if we're living above our means.
Mm-hmm.
And that's some of the problems in our community, that, you know, we make the money, but we don't write everything down. So once you write everything down, you'll be looking and like, golly, I'm really living from paycheck to paycheck.
Yep.
just to live this certain life. But if you do a budget and you can see exactly, oh, well, I really don't need that. You know, mm-hmm. I really don't need to have a $800 entertainment bill, you know, a month. So that's the first thing, is just to teach our community how to budget and how to live within your means. And of course, to save, because one thing we learned this year during the pandemic is that we have to be prepared for anything.
Anything.
You know, at the drop of... When this pandemic hit, the world instantly shut down.
Right.
Jobs were cut. We had very little warning, but it wasn't. We knew about this thing that was coming over, but we didn't know that it was going to literally shut the world down.
Right, for a year and a half.
Right, and it put a lot of people in a bind, because, you know, we never, you know. Even though they say, you know, you should have a savings, people have always preached that. But it wasn't until this year that, you know what, we should have really been doing that.
Yep. Yeah. And even like $20 a week in 4 years would be $10,000.
Exactly.
Or $20,000. Right.
Right. You know, in our community, people think that, oh, I gotta do a whole lot. No, you start off small. You have to train yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you have to think of like your body. If you want to lose weight, or you want to train your body to have a certain physique, you have to gradually train your body to get where you want. Mm-hmm. You have to do that with your finances and your mind. You have to train. I can't. If you never budgeted before, I can't tell you to put $300 in your savings accounts every week. Or every month.
Right.
You're not ready for that. Let's start off small. Let's do small goals.
Right. Because that goes back to the relationship with money. Like, we think that's a... I mean, if you ain't had that experience of keeping that out of your... That might be your buffer for that paycheck. You know what I mean? And...
Right.
You not even used to even putting it over in something and saying to yourself, I ain't going to touch that.
Right. Look, putting an account where it's hard for for you to get to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go through ropes to get it. And that's what I tell people too, especially when you talk about savings, try to find an account that you can access to, but it's not as easy. Mm-hmm. Not the easy that you just pull up to it and withdraw if you need to. So that's one of the things, you know, that I do is just teach the community about, educate them on taxes, entrepreneurs, because I've run into a lot of entrepreneurs, and even at Southern, I've met a lot of Black entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs, and they were just saying, you know, how, you know, they had someone to guide them on what to do once they make the money.
Yeah.
So when I got into my community, you know, I was running to entrepreneurs. Oh, I have this boutique. I have this hair salon. I have this barbershop. I have this counseling agency, you know, grocery store. I know I made the money, but what do I do next?
Right.
You know, there are certain things that you need to have in place to keep your business successful. It's just not okay. I see my sales.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the hard part. That's I have a philosophy called work hard that I am developing and I'm writing a book on. And it's the pretty much the nuances of what you actually need to do to be successful at whatever you choose to do. So we have a lot of entrepreneurs out there that are great entrepreneurs, but don't understand all the parts and pieces to what they're doing and how they can really impact the world as well as themselves and their company and stuff like that. But like it takes a little bit of research and habit forming and utilizing your resources that is going to help you and push you to that next level. And just going through it and just understanding the nuances. A lot of entrepreneurs just get into entrepreneurship just because they know they're passionate about it or they want to make money or that's just their personality, you know. And I'm like, hey, just slow down a little bit. Check out the scenery. Right. and see how this all fits and kind of study your craft. You know, like I study for a long time. That's why people ask me to do so many things. I just joined a kind of like a motorcycle group, and they wanted me to do their social media, and I'm like, I can't do it. I got 8 social media or 8 Instagram accounts that I can't even keep up with. How you going? Like, I can't do that. You know, I'm busy. Oh, like, wow. I got 8 jobs and stuff like that. So I'm trying to write a book and all of these different things. I volunteer all of these things. And I'm like, I can't do that. I can teach somebody how to do it. If that's, you know, I can talk somebody through it and let them know what I know. But for me to actually do it, sit there and take pictures, I don't even do that for myself. Like, to get to the point is that like I've studied, social media marketing for about 4 or 5 years, you know, just understanding trends and, you know, reading books and kind of immersing myself in these different subjects before I actually do it, you know. So I kind of have a background and understand how every piece fits. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, at least they making the money.
Right.
At least you got the money after that. But it's hard to go back because that process is the patient process. Like when you did the internship, like that was the patience part of it. It's at the beginning. But once you get into the actual work, like our entrepreneurs are, like it's hard to retrace those steps. And my mission is to get people to make a plan and understand the plan. You can make adjustments with the plan that you have, but understand what the purpose is, what the nuances is of what you're trying to do before you go actually do it. Because once you get into it, Like, once you get into the basketball game, like, you can't practice no more. That stuff has to be...
Right.
That stuff has to be... It has to be second nature, almost. So, and then you just making adjustments as you go along. So, I just... And then, for me, I see that, like, we have so much more potential in changing the world, right? So in 20 years, this country will be a majority-minority country, right? That's going to come with it a whole bunch more opportunities. But if we're getting our young people to become entrepreneurs really early, and they start making that money, you know, our relationship with money is different, right? Don't come from it and we get it, what's the likelihood of us going back and cultivating our gift is what I'm seeing. I'm like, are we really going to cultivate our gift? An 18-year-old starts making hundreds of thousands of dollars at 18 years old, but they could have been the one to take us to Venus if they would have took a little extra time and saw what they were really, really good at.
Mm-hmm.
And cultivated that a little bit more. And then, I mean, entrepreneurship is great. But this is just me talking, because I'm just foreseeing the future, because not everybody, like, real estate will be around, but not everybody can be a real estate developer, and not everybody can be in the stock market like that. Those are things that come with it. Like, we should be involved in all of that, but our main focus and cultivation, it should be those gifts that are inside us. And I don't think we take the time out to actually look at that. Like, look, what am I really, really good at, and what makes us unique? Because, you know, social media marketing, and I have a social media marketing firm, and I'm making so much amount of money. Like, is that it? You know?
Right.
I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I'm just talking.
I think the same way. You know, but we have to have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so, so, so important, because, you know, like you said, you know, you could make the money, but what you're going to do after, you know, how you know, in your plan, you need to have some steps. Okay, once I achieve this goal, then I'm going to do this with my company, or I'm going to bring in someone else to teach them what I know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in our community that we do focus on it, and I learned that at Southern, you know, to whatever you know, teach your counterpart. You know, because we both can, we work better when we collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
Versus as saying we in competition with each other. We can get so more accomplished by working together. And so that was one of the things at Southern, too, that I've learned and experienced. But in our community, we do need to, our entrepreneurs need to have a plan. You know,
mm-hmm.
need to have a plan in place of what, if this happens, then I'm going to do this. Once this goal is achieved, how are you going to grow?
Mm-hmm.
Because in entrepreneurship, you always want to grow. You never want to stay at the same level.
Right.
Because the world is always evolving. So you always want to be able to make whatever your business is adapt to that new culture.
Right.
You always want to grow, you know, grow your business. So that needs to be in your plan. You know,
because,
just say, oh, well, I'm just going to have a boutique, you know. No, once you reach that goal, what are you going to do next?
Right, because you could become irrelevant at the drop of a dime.
Right.
Your business can be irrelevant, like, or, you know, I met this one lady, she's here in Kansas City, and... She has a boutique, but she does, like, plus size women, and like she has this plan, and like she only does like appointments. So she'll take them through a whole VIP experience. So I went into her boutique and everything, because I don't know, I was riding my motorcycle around, and I get gas right like a block away from where her boutique is, and she pulled up and was like, what do you do? Like, what? It's like, I'm trying to get on your level and stuff. And so we just started talking, and her boutique, she was like, I take my clients through this VIP experience. And, you know, I'm a life coach. So I was like, hey, you need a life coach? Or like, I do everything. So I go through her boutique and I'm like, hey, you could add this as you can add a weekly show. Because she has this like personality that is infectious. Like you drawn to her. Even is she like your auntie that smokes cigarettes and drink coffee type person? And you know, but she like she professional with it. She's just very direct, and she gives you an experience. And I was like, you got this whole place set up. It like she had this sofa with her logo on it in this room with good lighting. You got the sunlight coming in, and I was like, you could do a weekly show showing women, especially in our community, plus size women, how to dress. And you know, you could have other like designers and things come in and do interviews, and you can make that a part of your cultivation. And when they come to Kansas City, you could be like the spot they hit up and get some clothes from, and you know, they can get that VIP right. experience. You know, I was like, shoot, you got all the makings of, and that's the expansion. She was like, I don't know nothing about that. You know, I got my own Facebook and all that stuff, but that's the nuances that we have to learn inside our craft, that we got to be conscious of. And that's probably why we need a team to kind of look at these different, because some of us are just good at one aspect of the business, like entrepreneurship and finding the right clothes for that boutique and where to find them and how to clean them, and like that's a lot of mind work.
Right.
That's going around, and you need somebody else to look at those. That's why Michael Jordan needed a coach, and he needed some teammates. Like the coach exactly, can see something else.
Because he couldn't win the championship just by itself.
Right.
You had to have a team.
Right.
And I teach that too to my clients, that, you know, okay, if you own this business, work on your specialty. You know, whatever your passion or your business is, that's for you. The other stuff, you have to learn how to outsource.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, as a business owner, we cannot be our attorney. We can't be our social media person. We can't be our accountant. We can't be the office janitor. We can't be the office manager.
Mm-hmm.
We have to delegate those other job titles so we could continue to grow the seed that is funding this business.
Right. Yeah, and so, and you got to trust some people that's outside of your environment. I mean, it can't always be your friends and family, and it probably won't be your friends and family, because yeah, that's a whole nother thing too. Do you hire friends and family?
I have. But sometimes, you know, even though when you're an entrepreneur, you want to help out your friends and family, but you have to do what's best for your business. Mm-hmm. If they don't meet the qualifications or be able to produce how you need items to produce, you have to get the most qualified. It's nothing personal, it's business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially if you try to teach them, you know, how to do it that the way that it needs to be done for your business. And, you know, sometimes they may not get it. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to hire the person that can.
Right. Yeah.
And that's the thing. And, you know, I tell people, just don't take it personal. Remember, you know, and sometimes that's why I tell clients that it may not be a good idea to hire a family or friends, because both of you have to understand, when you get into that door of the business, or when y'all in that business environment, that this is business. This has nothing to do with personal.
And usually we take it personal.
Yeah, we do. But, you know, again, that's a learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, I've experienced as a business owner. But, you know, I learn from it.
So. Right. And I think, I talk with a lot of white people, right? And, you know, I've been around a lot of white people. So that aspect, just thinking about the learning process of entrepreneur, that is something that's already in their culture. Like, they don't even necessarily talk about that. Is so ingrained in their culture on how things work, right? The nuances of how things work. So even if they wanted to teach me how they did something, they don't even understand the nuances that I need to know, because this is what they've been doing for so many generations, right? And
right.
That's where I be talking to my white friends, that was one of the things that segregation, Jim Crow, all of that, slavery, all of that stuff held us back from learning these different things. And it was a purposeful hold back. Like, it wasn't just we didn't want to do it. It was just y'all didn't let us do it, so we couldn't develop. So now we're behind, and you see it in the wealth gap as well, that we have to learn these things, and y'all looking at us like we just don't know, and we got to learn these things on the fly. And then you're not even giving us an opportunity, because y'all companies have been around for hundreds of years. So we can't even, you got a whole lock on the whole system, because y'all been around for 100 years. But if y'all would have let us start at the same time, we would be right there with y'all.
Right. You know, like I talked about earlier, you know, we don't have an even playing field. We don't. You know, we our culture has to work 3 to 4 times harder to get where our counterparts or either to just show that we can compete
mm-hmm.
at that level. You know, so yeah, we definitely don't have the same equal playing field, but that still shouldn't stop you.
Right, right.
I mean, we just that should push our community just to work extra hard, just to prove that, you know, we are capable.
Right, and prove to ourselves, right. Nobody else.
Right.
We know, I mean, we know, but then we got to prove it to ourselves. It ain't an outside thing either. So,
right.
To end this, like, we got about 7 minutes. Can you give us a little snippet of what your chapter is about? I know you touched on it a little bit, but kind of give us a good snippet of what the chapter is about. Sell the book. And then give us some words of wisdom to end this podcast.
Okay. Well, my chapter, I talked about 3 things that I learned at SU. One of them we talked about was patience. The other one was knowledge. You know, I learned a lot about the African-American culture at Southern that I didn't learn in my history books. I'm not sure where those books were. You know, but I didn't know it until I came to Southern. And so I'm so grateful for that. I learned about the history of Southern, you know, and also I learned the power of networking. If I didn't network, I wouldn't be the tech doctor that I am now. You know, at Southern, I learned how, you basically had no choice. You're going to learn how to network. You're going to learn how to talk to talk to other people. You're going to learn how to communicate, you know. So those were some of the three things that were very important through my years at Southern that molded me to the person today. You know, we talked about patience. Patience is so important. Because if I didn't have patience, I wouldn't have finished in Southern. Because, you know, you need to have patience. You need to have understanding. And, you know, it prepared me for life. I was so shell thinking that, oh, okay, I could just make a call and that's going to happen, you know, but those things, you know, I'm so grateful that I experienced those things. Those were basically one of the three things that I learned at Southern, and I talk about it in a book. So that's why I encourage you to get the book. There's other 39 authors that are in the book that talk about the experience at Southern University. This will be a good graduation gift to students or either just alumni, just so they could read to know more about Southern, all the good things that happened. But those were my three things that I focused on the book, the power of having patience, you know, learning the knowledge of my history, and of course, the power of networking. I am so grateful that I was pushed to network, to go outside of my shy shell. Mm-hmm. As much as we talk today, I am really shy. But it's something
that I am too.
So when we talk about Southern University and you talk about my passion of accounting and taxes, I just light up and I just go on. But, you know, I'm just so thankful for the and that's why I say, you know, even when we started talking, that this all was my purpose of going to Southern was all divine. Like, because on paper, I was going somewhere else, but life turned me around. And just when I got to Southern, just things started happening. I just started meeting people. And I was just thankful for the Alumni Association, you know, just the alumni just to come, you know, to reach down and saw a student, you know. I just wasn't privileged like other students. So I grew up in Scotlandville, which is a predominantly Black neighborhood, which is low class, you know. Technically they call it the hood, you know, but I'm not a product of my environment. You know, I took what I saw around me, and I knew that I wanted to do better. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thankful that Southern University was there to help, you know, show me that, you know, you don't have to be what your environment is around.
Mm-hmm.
And the alumni that, you know, just gave me opportunities that I didn't have.
Well, I appreciate everything. Everybody go get the book. It is out June 3rd on Amazon. I mean, all of the books from the HBCU Experience Movement have been fabulous. I've interviewed a lot of the authors in those books, and the experience at the HBCU is incomparable. And getting taught by your own is something different, and it's something special. So go get the book, read these experiences, encourage your student, your young adults, or you to go to an HBCU.
Yes. And also for the alums of HBCUs, you know, look, when you read my chapter, you will see the importance of giving back. If you graduated from HBCU, you can give back your time, your finances, because I am a product of what alums can do for students and mold them to be successful in our community.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Success Is My Religion podcast. Make sure you go get the HBCU Experience Movement's new book out on Amazon. Make them the best-selling authors this time again. I go get that book. the HBCU experience, the Southern University System edition. It is great. The co-authors are great. You heard it. Go get it. Talk to you soon.